The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Now, homes and hospitals will be prioritised in the event of power cuts this winter, so they say, but how likely are they? Well, joining me now, researcher at the Maroi Energy Centre at UCC, Dr. Paul Dean. Paul, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, we've heard about various gas generators going offline and online. We've heard about, you know, when the wind doesn't blow, we'll be short of capacity. What is the situation going into perhaps the coldest time of the year?
Yes, Pat, it's been a very difficult year, actually, for the power system in Ireland. And in fact, many of the things that we've spoken about now wouldn't seem too out of place back in the 1980s and the early 90s when the power system was quite fragile. And probably if you're outside of your mid-30s, you might remember back to those days. But since then, we've had an amazing, reliable and secure delivery of electricity right across Ireland. And in many ways, we've kind of forgotten, really, how much we rely on electricity. Now, what happened this year, of course, as you mentioned, there was a major incident at two different power stations in Ireland that took out about 10% of our ability to generate electricity. These are two very large power stations, Pat, that just broke down. In the same way that your car might break down, these power stations are very large, mechanical and complex devices, and when they go down, they cause ripple effects right across the system. But the good news, Pat, for your listeners is that one of those stations is back up and running now at the moment, Hunstown up in Dublin. That's back up and running. It's actually power generating electricity as we speak. And the other station, Whitegate down here in Cork, will be back up and running hopefully within the month. Now, Pat, that will take a huge amount of pressure off the system, and that dramatically reduces the risk of the probability of blackouts this winter. So hopefully this winter it looks like things will be fine. We should be able to avoid the risk of blackout, which is good news for right across the economy.
Now, that period you referred back to in the 1980s, there was one provider of power, and that was the ESB. Then came the deregulation of the energy market, and you have a number of providers who offer their wares for sale to the grid. How does that market work?
Yeah, so in Ireland, we've got a liberalised electricity market at the moment. And even though, you know, we still, many of us at home, Pat, would refer to the electricity as the ESB, but there's actually about 13 different suppliers of electricity in the market at the moment. Now, what they do, Pat, is that they buy electricity from a kind of a power pool market, or from a kind of a virtual market, if you will. They buy it off generators who either produce power using fossil fuels or renewables, and they sell that on to customers. Now, it's been quite beneficial for Ireland, really. You know, there's a good diversity of different suppliers around Ireland. And actually, if you're listening to this and you haven't changed your electricity supplier in the last 12 months, have a look online. A lot of the new suppliers are actually offering very good deals. And that's really important at the moment, Pat, because electricity prices are rising dramatically because we're seeing a really significant increase in international fuel prices. So that's been passed on to us. So the new market in Ireland, it's quite liberal, it's quite diverse, and there are good deals out there for people who are willing and able to change their supplier.
Yeah. Now, I'm more interested, rather than the retailers who might try to sell me their stuff, be it Energia, Electric Ireland, Bord Gáis Éireann, whoever it might be. I'm interested in the people who generate. Besides the ESB, who are the other generators?
Yeah, well, some of those companies that you mentioned would be both on the supply and on the generation side as well, Pat. You'd have Bord Gáis Energy, you'd have the Energias, the SSE. Also smaller companies such as Tina Energy, Bord and Mona, some of the smaller hydro operators. It's torrential rain down here in Cork this morning. Very good day for the hydro generators. Some of the smaller wind generators as well. Now, a lot of the smaller renewable companies are probably, they're not household names. They'll be very small companies that people wouldn't have heard of. SSE, or formerly known as Electricity, would be probably one of the most likely known. And what these companies do is generate electricity, as I said, predominantly from fossil fuels. Now, in Ireland, we've actually made very good steps, Pat, in the last number of years. Last year, 40% of all our electricity generated on the island came from renewable electricity, which shows a real increase in the number of companies who are building wind farms and generating renewable electricity. But of course, the fossil fuel suppliers like the ESB, Bord Gáis Energy, are still very much part of our system. And if I will, they're very an important part of the system as well when it comes to reliability.
Now, are there rules in terms of what goes into the grid? I mean, if you've got wind available because it's a windy day, if you've got hydro available because the rain is falling and you've got rivers in full flood where there is hydro available, do they have to be taken first to the exclusion of all else?
Yes, yes. And that's important, actually, because of European law, which promotes clean renewables. There is a law which encourages suppliers to, if they can, within technical reasons, because at sometimes due to technical complexities of the power system, you might not be able to take all the power that's available from the generation, and you have to shut some power stations down, particularly some renewable generators. So, for example, Pat, yesterday it was incredibly windy here right across Ireland. So some wind farms would be what we called curtailed. That means that some of their production would have been shut off. But Airgrid, who operate the power system here in Ireland, they're obliged to take as much green electricity as they can onto the system. Now, that's actually a good thing, Pat, because it tends to be the cheapest form of electricity as well. So that's good for the overall market economically, but it's also very good environmentally.
You've said something there which will baffle people. Because it was windy, we lost wind power. Explain.
Yeah, so sometimes we just generate way too much electricity than we need from wind power. So, for example, at midday yesterday, the wind was blowing very, very strong. But actually, right across the country, we weren't consuming an awful lot of electricity. Now, what we do in those situations, Pat, is that we can export some electricity, sell some electricity to the UK, or either through interconnectors, through Dublin to Wales, or from Northern Ireland to Scotland. And that's what we do. But if there isn't a market then to buy it, what the grid operator, this is Airgrid, who makes sure that we are generating enough electricity at the time, they'll send little signals to the wind farm owners to turn down. And what they do is that they just basically change the direction of their wind turbines or change the profile of their blades, so they're actually generating less electricity. And this is something that in Ireland, as we build more and more wind into the future, is probably something that we're going to see more of. To give you a context, Pat, actually last year we probably curtailed about 7 to 10% of all our renewable electricity last year because we couldn't use it, we couldn't export it, and we couldn't store it.
The question then of the stability of the grid. I mean, I remember a few years ago they were saying you couldn't have more than 30% wind or something in the grid because it would affect the stability. And now we're up above, some days, above 50% or more. So what is it about the stability of the grid? Do you still have to have gas or other fossil fuel generators spinning, ready to click in should the wind die down?
Yeah, it's been remarkable progress, really, Pat. And actually, 20 years ago, we had a moratorium in Ireland for building new wind farms because we were very worried that the grid would go out of sync. We have to be very careful when it comes to electricity that we're always generating the exact amount of electricity as we're using, because storing electricity is just a very difficult technical option and very difficult economic option. But what we do need at the moment is we do need those fossil fuel power plants to step in when the wind isn't blowing. And when we look at our research here in UCC, Pat, what we find is that the best way for our countries like Ireland to reduce emissions is to have wind farms and solar farms. Now, they do this, they reduce emissions by reducing the use of fossil fuel power plants, but they don't replace the need for fossil fuel power plants, which are very important, as you said, which need to step in quickly when the wind isn't blowing or if there's a big change in solar profile. So we will need fossil fuel power plants going into the foreseeable future, but we have to make sure we're trying to use them as little as possible.
Now, what will happen this winter if we do have a scarcity of capacity because of another breakdown, because of maybe temperature inversions which becalm the whole country, which can happen? If there are shortages, whose lights go out first?
Yeah, so the Airgrid, the operator, Pat, they have a number of protocols that are in place. Now, these protocols date back for a number of decades. Many of them are nothing new. Back in the 80s and 90s, a very typical thing would be to ring up manufacturers or people who are pumping water or even crushing rock in quarries, and they would ask them to turn off large industrial devices. So this is called peak shaving or load shedding, where you essentially get large industrial users to drop their demand. And again, this gives headroom to the grid, takes a lot of pressure off the system. And this is what we still do today, actually, Pat. Now, the industrial landscape has changed. We have a lot more data centres now in Ireland. So what will happen, and you've mentioned at the outset, you know, vulnerable consumers are typically protected in Ireland. Hospitals or any critical care services will be protected from any shut off of power unless there is a catastrophic situation. So what the operator would tend to do is look to large industrial users to turn off their loads for a couple of hours. And for many of them, this is a very easy thing to do. They can delay what they're doing and do it later. So if there is a shortage on the grid, what will happen, Pat, is that Airgrid will contact the large industrial users and they'll get them to spin down their load or stop doing what they're doing or get them to do it later. Yeah. And this gives, as I said, huge headroom and takes a lot of stress.
Now, obviously, you don't want to lose your data. So what do data centres do? Do they have standby generation anyway that they just flick on if the grid can't supply them?
So it very much depends on what type of data center you're looking at. Data centers are kind of a very mixed bunch of sizes, of capabilities, and of capacities. So very large multinationals like the Googles or the Facebooks, for them, they have options, for example, to stop doing what they're doing in Ireland if it's or tagging photographs or something, and they might do that somewhere else. They might be able to do it in Arizona or in Australia where it's sunny or where it's windy. So they have the ability to reduce their power quickly in some countries if they can do what they're doing in another country. Other data centers, for example, Pat, if you're backing up critical data for hospitals and you need to turn down, they then would rely on on-site generation, and that would either be diesel-fired generators, like a lot of hospitals would have, or gas-fired generators.
Now, the questions from our listeners is like, when are we going to be able to put solar PV on our roofs and sell back into the grid?
Yeah, and this is very exciting. And this is one of the things that's actually coming right through the Oireachtas at the moment. And hopefully within the next year or two, there'll be a price put, well, hopefully within the next year, Pat, a price will be put in place where customers can sell the excess electricity back to the grid. And this is really good, actually, because the cost of solar panels have fallen dramatically over the last even 5 to 7 years. Now, I know it's frustrating that there's a delay in this, but actually we would still expect the price of solar panels to keep on falling over the next year or two. So that's something that if your listeners are interested in, if they can afford to do it, they should certainly pursue.
Why can't they build more Thurlock Hills? It means you pump up the water when you have excess power, store it there, and it generates hydro on the way back down. There was the Spirit of Ireland project suggested a few years ago, which never came to anything, using a fjord on the west coast. Is that not a starter at all?
It's one of those ideas, Pat, that's conceptually perfect. You know, it's logistically, you can see how it would work. But from an environmental perspective, the idea of pumping salt water up into uplands or up into mountainous areas becomes very environmentally risky. And one of the big challenges actually for that exact project, the Spirit of Ireland, was environmental constraints. And even if we spread it out even further, Pat, building more Thurlock Hills. Now, there's plans to build maybe one or more Thurlock Hill type things in the Midlands and the silver mines. But unfortunately, we just don't have the geography, we just don't have the topography, and environmental constraints are a big limiting factor for those types of very large developments.
The question of nuclear comes up all the time, and we know there are in development compact nuclear reactors and not the big gargantuan things we see on the west coast of Britain, for example. Also, there's molten salt technology, which would be incredibly safe. Any prospects?
Yeah, and you're right, Pat. Look, very large nuclear reactors just don't make technical sense in a small power system like Ireland. So even if you park the public acceptance and political support, it just doesn't work from a technical perspective. So as you said, we need to look to the future and look at new types of designs, small modular reactors, which again are promised to be safe, reliable, and more affordable. Now, the challenge there, Pat, at the moment is they're not available commercially at the moment. And when we look at the literature and look at the scientific research, it's probably looking to the next decade before they become available. So realistically, we're probably talking about 10 to 15 years before that would become a viable option in Ireland. But if it does become a viable option, we should, of course, pursue it, because when we look at our climate goals and when we look what we have to do, we really have to consider all options that are available to us, not just the ones we may like.
Someone else says, we have an untapped source of renewable energy in Ireland with cattle slurry and anaerobic digestion. You capture the methane in the cattle slurry and then pump the gas into the national grid. The results would be less emissions from the national herd. Renewable gas for the grid and dry matter byproducts could be used as low emission fertilizer. That kind of equation looks attractive.
It is, and this is something that actually makes a lot of sense, and it's one of these things, Pat, that other countries are doing a lot. In Germany, for example, would have over 5,000 of these anaerobic digesters, and essentially, just for your listeners, anaerobic digesters, Pat, are like metal cows. You put in the silage, put in the slurry, bugs eat up all the food, and they produce gas. You capture that gas, and you can use that gas then to power trucks or heat homes, and this is something that we have very real potential for in Ireland, and we are unfortunately falling behind, and it's something that we will have to consider quite seriously going forward. Now, the potential is small. It's not a game changer. It's not a silver bullet. But it would allow farmers to diversify from areas of unprofitable farming. It would encourage a kind of a cooperative movement for community farmers to come together and maybe build one of these digesters and sell the natural gas back into the grid. And if we look at the numbers from the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland, Pat, they reckon that the potential in Ireland, we could probably produce about 30% of our heating needs from this type of renewable gas alone if we did it correctly and did it within the environmental constraints of our land.
Finally, Paul, I was reading something in Britain about how they've added 20% hydrogen to some gas supplies for people to cook with and so on. And back in the day, there used to be a lot of hydrogen in gas supplies in Britain and presumably in Ireland as well when they got gas from coal. Is there potential for us to create hydrogen using our excess wind and then pump 20% into our gas distribution?
Yes, there is, Pat. And it's kind of funny, really, how things kind of recirculate back through time as well. As you mentioned, a lot of the cities like Cork, Dublin, Galway would have been fired and lit by town gas, which is essentially kind of a very similar thing. And this is one of the big projects, I suppose, or big bets that the Irish government and a number of companies are taking here in Ireland at the moment. The ESB, for example, is looking very closely at Money Point. Money Point is a big coal-fired power station down in Clare at the moment, but they're looking exactly at that concept. When it's very windy, and we're talking about the oversupply that I mentioned earlier, when you can't export wind or can't use it, you can transform it into another kind of a vector or an energy carrier, which is hydrogen. And hydrogen can be used then to heat homes, or you can store it, which makes it a lot easier. So This is something that's very plausible for the future. We probably have to manage our expectations. It's probably a decade or more into the future. A lot of research needs to be done in that way, but it is something that's been actively pursued in Ireland at the moment.
Dr. Paul Dean, researcher at the Marai Energy Centre at UCC, thank you very much for joining us.